huge, super important, critical show coming up today as the Ringer's Ben Solak joins me to go over all of the new head coach and offensive coordinator hires from this year's cycle. Chargers, we're excited about Jim Harbaugh, but are we gassed up about what this offense is going to look like in 2024? Am I buying back into the Atlanta Falcons and Seattle Seahawks offenses after some unenjoyable 2023 outputs? And who is the biggest variance offensive coordinator hire of this year? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Tuesday, February 20th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is the Ringer's Ben Solak. Ben, what's going on, buddy?
Appreciate you having me on, Matt. Yeah, offseason time. Forget about all those results. Let's talk about the 45th best free agent in the league, man. Let's do it.
Look, we've talked a lot about this. Talked about this a lot on the show recently. I enjoy the offseason. I mean, I enjoy the real games more than the offseason because I'm not a lunatic. But at the same time, man, it does feel good to talk big picture ideas, talk, you know, things that, like you said, no real accountability. Forget the results. We're talking about process, baby. And that's what we're going to do on this show today. I've teased this show a lot. I'm excited about this one. We have really kind of, throughout the playoffs, just avoided talking about these coaching changes on the show to build it all up for one big show here today. Because, Ben, if 2023 taught us anything, it's that coaching really, really matters. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think your Eagles are actually a perfect example of this. I mean, look what happens when you take Shane Steichen out of Philadelphia and you stick him in Indianapolis. Bad things for one team, good things for the other. So that's the goal of this show today. It's to kind of break down all these coaching changes and sort of rank them, I guess, in terms of what moves the needle most in terms of the potential positive impact on these offensive ecosystems. So let's start off with the group of teams that changed both their head coach and their offensive coordinator. And I think the Chargers are a perfect place to start here. They hire former Michigan head coach and former, obviously, long time ago, 49ers head coach Jim Harbaugh. They also bring in former 49ers offensive coordinator with Jim Harbaugh back in the day, Greg Roman. Also, he was the offensive coordinator with the Ravens in Lamar Jackson's early eras. So, Ben, tell me about what you your reaction to this move and how you think this is going to play out schematically with this offense.
Yeah, I thought Harbaugh was a really good hire for the Chargers. I think that Harbaugh is a great coach. I think he's one of the 32 best coaches in the world. I think he's a good NFL head coach. The Chargers need a dash of professionalism, a dash of known quantityism, and I think that that's a lot of what Harbaugh brings to the table for you. Now, obviously, Harbaugh's approach for much of the of his career has been that of a CEO head coach, right? It's been, you know, kind of calling the shots from above, same as his brother, and then an offensive guy's going to handle the offensive staff and a defensive guy to handle the defensive staff. We'll have two legit coordinators. We were all like, all right, like, this is great. Just please don't bring in Greg Roman. Like, just the way that this would stink is if, like, you gave the keys over to Greg Roman. And then they gave the keys over to Greg Roman. And I think that that's, it's tricky. I think Greg Roman, again, like, I started by saying Jim Harbaugh is a good coach. I also think Greg Roman is a good coach. Like, there's stuff that Roman has coached a good running game for a long time in the NFL now at multiple spots. And the reason why Roman was so successful when he first started with Harbaugh in the league, right, in San Francisco, is because he was willing to pull stuff and do stuff from the college level that guys weren't willing to do yet, like using the pistol and using read option and stuff like that. So he understands how to find a leverage point, find an edge in the NFL and implement it. The problem is, I think he's due for some updating. I think he's due for some, okay, like the same stuff that was getting the drop on teams in 2013, 2014 isn't getting the drop anymore, right? And we have to be more willing to evolve in the running game and evolve to spread formations, get more speed on the field and have a running game that doesn't need as many tight ends, as many fullbacks to be successful. So they paired him with Marcus Brady as a passing game coordinator. Marcus Brady was OC with Frank Reich under Indianapolis. He spent the last year in Philadelphia. He's like of the Shane Steichen, Nick Sirianni tree. You've heard good things about him. Like I obviously, like, he didn't last in Indy, and then the Eagles passing game wasn't great. So there's not like a lot of like, wow, like look at the impact he's had on stuff. And so there's a big question mark here. I think that overall it's a good hire and Harbaugh's a good coach, but offensively, like I don't see a vision for like what Harbaugh Roman brain trust has done previously that marries with what Justin Herbert does well. And I don't really look at the staff and go like, oh, here's where the new ideas will be coming from. Here's where the infusion of passing game creativity will come from. Their QB coach is Shane Day. He's been Herbert's QB coach before. Their wide receiver coach is Sanjay Lal. He's been in the league for like 25 bajillion years. Like, they feel like they're just going to kind of do the same old stuff. And I don't think that's going to be good with Herbert throwing to like Alex Erickson again.
Right. I think that's kind of the crux of the Chargers offseason, is that this personnel group, I think more so than the casual fan probably thinks, it really feels like a blank slate. Like, the running back room, Austin Eckler is a free agent. Josh Kelly's a free agent. In the wide receiver room, I think Mike Williams is definitely going to be cut. I don't know what your opinion on like where Keenan Allen is at this point in his career, but he is making a lot of money. Is he a potential guy they move off of? The tight end room, you talk about Greg Roman's offense throwing tight ends on tight ends on tight ends on the field. Mm-hmm. This tight end room has been a problem for years. So I think it's kind of fair to wonder what this offensive scheme and these group of guys, what they want to marry to the talent, because really, to me, I think whoever's going to be a part of the Chargers core is probably not on this roster, at least like in 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And like, I think it would behoove the Chargers to do a little 1 year wash, right? Where it's like, okay, let's like draft a tackle. And let's, we just restructured Corey Linsley's deal. Let's draft an interior player. And like, let's make sure that our line is good and we can protect Herbert. And let's get a couple young guys in here and, you know, throw some dice rolls on some dudes. And if we're the 20th ranked offense, we're the 20th ranked offense. But hey, like, the coverage are pretty bare. The last guy spent a lot of money on Khalil Mack and on JC Jackson and on Joey Bosa and on Mike Williams and Keenan Allen. And that's just, they wanted to win with that. And there's no chance we're winning with that over the next few years. They also, last guy spent some picks, right? Like Quentin Johnson, where I don't know if we're winning with that either. And so it's okay to take a 1 year recovery period. I think that's fine. You gotta know what you're doing and be able to set expectations. It's easy to say like, all right, well, we're gonna reload for a year. It's another thing to be 3-8 and be like, this sucks. So you got to commit to it. But I think it would be good for the Chargers. And if they do that, I won't mind it too much.
Yeah, I think that having Greg Roman around and having Jim Harbaugh around like sets you at some level of a floor. But I don't think they're reaching a ceiling maybe ever with this group, and certainly not right this this year at all. I think that level of competency is going to be nice. I think whoever they draft at running back, whoever they bring in at running back, I'm going to be interested in that player because I think this run game has been historically a good unit. So that's kind of it, though. From a pass game standpoint, I'm ready to believe anything in terms of who they line up at wide receiver this year and really what that looks like, because this group of players went stale in Los Angeles towards the end, and this offense in terms of Greg Roman in Baltimore ran stale by the time it was over there. So I came into this very excited about the Jim Harbaugh thing, and you are kind of bringing me down a little bit, which I think is fine because I've been sort of mixed a little bit. I really don't.
Harbaugh and Herbert, they're gonna compete. They're gonna be around. Like they're gonna have games where Herbert kind of wills them into existence. I don't think they're gonna be a total nothing burger. I think Harbaugh and Herbert are both too good for that. I just don't see the vision yet. Right? There's too much uncertainty at the skill position players, and there's too much of a question mark at OC for me to be like, oh, this is how this is going to work. So bring me back in October. We'll talk about what we see then.
There we go. Yeah, I think ultimately it's going to work from a on-field product standpoint. I think they're going to win games. I'm with you. I don't know what the vision of the offense looks like. Now, this next one I'm much more excited about. I'm interested to hear your thoughts here. The Falcons hire Raheem Morris, defensive coordinator from the Rams. They bring in former Rams quarterback coach and passing game coordinator Zach Robinson. And I don't know about you, Ben, and listen, we have no idea what Zach Robinson is going to come in here and do from a schematic standpoint, but theoretically, the offense that they ran with the Rams last year, and which was a pretty stark departure from some of the early Sean McVay teams, I actually think fits this group of players from a Drake London, from a Bijan Robinson, even maybe from a Kyle Pitts standpoint. I think it fits this group a lot. How excited are you about this potential offensive?
Yeah, so you bring up the offense that they ran, right? And that's the tricky thing here, is that when Robinson started with the Rams in 2019, they were in prime Goff era, right? Under center, zone, duo, play action. And then they transitioned with Stafford to be more spread, more gun, more drop back passing game, get the back involved in the passing game a little bit more, right? But that was because they had a grown up back there. And you don't know who's going to be back there for the Rams at quarterback. And accordingly, you don't know what they're going to want to do. Like, if Atlanta lands Justin Fields, I don't think they're going to run the Stafford offense for him. And they're going to run the Goff offense for him. That just makes more sense for his skill set, and it also can map nicely onto the Falcons personnel, because hey, like, Arthur Smith was running some of that stuff when he was here previously. With With that said, I think Robinson's a smart cookie, right? Like, I think that all the things you've heard about him, how quickly he rose to the Rams coaching staff, glowing recommendations. Like, I believe in him, and I also believe in Raheem, who I think, like, Raheem is also a player-oriented guy. I think they're going to get an offense on the field that works for the players that they have available. Like, I'm all my Dynasty Drake London shares are thrilled with this hire. Not because, like, oh, they run...
You and me both, buddy.
Yeah, not because, like, oh, they run an offense that funnels wide receiver one, but just, like, Drake's very good and hasn't gotten the sort of volume that very good receivers typically do and the sort of utilization of very typical wide receiver ones typically do. He's probably going to get that now just because Raheem and Zach Robinson are going to sit down and be like, all right, we should probably get this guy the ball more and worry less about the Scotty Miller and Van Jefferson targets. And like that, like, right, it's just like, it's layup stuff a little bit. And so to me, like, this, right, I think that Robinson was going to be an OC somewhere. I have about as positive of an opinion as you can have on a guy with, like, he's only been in one system. Like, I've never spoken to him. You know, like, predicting OC hires is hard because usually it's like a guy who just hasn't done a lot that's, like, visible from the outside, but he gets glowing recommendations. And I think Ra is a smart guy. I think Ra is, like, again, like a player oriented coach who knows where his bread is buttered. So I think that you're going to see some of the ball distribution issues in the passing game from the Arthur Smith years get sussed out a little bit. And that'll be good for Drake and it'll be good for Pitts. I also think, yeah, like they, Robinson knows how to plug and chug a quarterback too. Right. And so I do think that they're well positioned to get a Justin Fields. If they get a Kirk Cousins, it's easy, right? It's Kirk. You can run the Stafford stuff mm-hmm. with Kirk. Like, Kevin O'Connell's been doing that. But I'm confident in their ability to grab a quarterback and in year one get the plane off the ground pretty quick.
I like that point about how if they get some guy that, you know, isn't quite on the Stafford level or isn't able to do all that stuff, we've seen this coaching staff put together an offense with a quarterback in Jared Goff that's a little bit more limited from what he can do. I like that versatility there. And I really just, I'm glad you brought up Drake London because I think about the conversation I had with Puka Nacua at Super Bowl week and him saying, look, and this was the answer I expected him to give when I asked him, what's your favorite route to run? And he brings up, like, the dagger routes, the in cuts, the digs and everything from this offense. To me, when I chart Drake London, when I look at his routes, like, those are the routes Drake London should be running. Those are the routes that probably Desmond Ridder could have done a better job getting him the football the last couple of years. I think they kind of strayed away from that, especially in 23. So to me, I'm with you. The dynasty bags for Drake London are looking good at this point. I like this hire a lot and everything it kind of paints for the Falcons.
Yeah, as a self-proclaimed Ridder guy, I also would have liked for a couple more accurate Ridder targets over the middle of the field. But yeah, like the quarterback, Atlanta's got that's my third offseason believing in the Atlanta Falcons, third straight, which is tough. They've had, like, three different offensive coordinators, or defense coordinators, excuse me, the whole time. I got to eventually get off this train. But infrastructure-wise, they have a lot going for them. They have to be able to plug-chug quarterback. And I think that this staff is capable of doing that. And if they get Kirk, like, they can take a big year one leap.
Yeah, and if you guys want more context on Raheem Morris and how excited the players are about him, I would encourage you to go to the Yahoo Sports YouTube page and check out the Bijan Robinson interview we did at Super Bowl week. He is gassed up about playing for Raheem Morris, man. So very exciting potential there for this team. Let's move on to the next one. And this one I'm really curious to pick your brain about because I don't watch a lot of college ball, especially until we get to the point where I'm charting these receivers. And I have started charting some of these Washington receivers, so I've got at least some background on what we're going to talk about here. But Seattle Seahawks, they hire former Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald. Love that hire. That was awesome. Then they go on to bring in former University of Washington, and I guess you could say University of Alabama offensive coordinator for about 2 seconds, Ryan Grubb. Ben, I have very little background on what to expect from Ryan Grubb and this Seahawks offense, but I do know they have some pretty good players on that roster that probably could be maximized a little more than they were last year.
Yeah, so I really like the way that Seattle has filled out the coaching staff. I think that McDonald, Alan Durday on the defensive side of the ball, and then Ryan Grubb is the offensive side of the ball, is like an aggressive but understandable, and I see the vision approach for how they've built out this staff. Grubb, right, OC at Washington the last couple of years. He was going to be at Alabama for a second. He was at Fresno before this. He's pretty much always been with Kalen DeBoer, who's the head coach at Seattle, now at Alabama. And offensively, like, I wouldn't describe him as being any sort of, like, he's definitely like, oh, air raid. Like, it's not like that, right? Oh, the spread. Like, they just do a lot of, like, here's what we're good at. And last year they had three NFL receivers and NFL quarterbacks. So they said, "Hey, we're good at throwing the ball down the field, and that's how we're gonna that's how we're going to live." So there's a lot of like play action pass stuff that's in there. There's NFL concepts that they borrowed. There's RPO and spread stuff that they do from the college level to kind of move the ball simply and win box count wise. So there's a lot of good intention. There's also a lot of stuff that doesn't map to the NFL. Like half of their play action concepts are like gun stuff with a pulling guard. Like pass protection wise, like it's just not gonna work. Like, you're just not going to be able to stay back there for that long and expect to win along the offensive line and also have the routes win as typically as they do. And, like, especially with Penix's arm, like, that's one of the reasons why it took so long. Penix's a little bit, like, slower processor and, like, doesn't have, like, the biggest arm in the world. And so, like, with Geno, like, maybe it could be faster. But, like, a lot of that stuff's going to have to go under center now, right? And, like, NFL teams are a lot better at reading you out under center. And, like, if it goes under center, it's going to need tight ends to actually excel the run fake. And, like, they were more of a spread team. And so, Grubb, like, it was very clearly a smart offense. But it is interesting because, like, a lot of what he did, you can't take one-to-one to the NFL level. You can try. I just don't think it's going to be nearly as successful. And so what you're banking on with Grubb is you're banking on smart cookie theorem. You're banking on, like, this guy, like, understands how to get football on the field. He's always done it with Jabbar, and now he's going to be doing it kind of on his own, which is interesting to me, right? There's just a level of trust, a level of, oh, like, we should do that one thing we did against Toledo in 2015. Now, like, he doesn't have that anymore, right? And he hasn't said McDonald came from the college ranks. He was in Michigan for a year. He didn't come from the college ranks, but had the experience of saying, all right, this is what I saw college teams do. This is how I adjusted my defense to it. And then I popped back up to the league. And here's kind of here's what teams can and can't get away with. So he's been through that experience before. I think that'll help Grubb. But Grubb is a big question mark to me. It is an encouraging question mark, an optimistic question mark. But like with a guy like Zach Robinson, I feel more confident in my expectation that he's at least above average relative to Grubb, where like I can see some hightail outcomes where he's sick and they're, you know, Geno's averaging 10 yards air yards of an attempt for the entire month of October, and DK Metcalf's running more than six routes, and Jackson Smith and Jigba is running more than just a screen every other play, and like, you know, they've really like opened the world up a little bit. I can also see a world where like they can't get that off the ground because like pass protection wise they have limits, or like illegal man downfield, or like the running game, and like just like, you know, the different hashes make it harder to play spread and harder to just like, you know, do RPOs to the wide side of the field. Like there's just limits for college guys coming to the league that I think it's easy to kind of wash over with Grubb, but you have to acknowledge like that's a tough climb back up. So I got a lot to believe in, and there's talent there. Like I'm a Geno guy, I was a Jackson Smith and Jigba guy, I'm a huge Zach Charbonnet guy. Like I like a lot of their talent. I do kind of want to see and hear when we get to summer and training camps what this offense is starting to look like and how it's coming together.
Yeah, in a weird way, Ben, it feels like I love, again, Mike McDonald. I could not speak high enough about what he did from a defensive standpoint there in Baltimore. And they had good players, stuff like that, but the way they mixed coverages up on the back end, the way they really made quarterbacks put a lot of burden on quarterbacks from a post snap standpoint. I thought that was super impressive. That was great. But at the same time, I love that hire. It does feel like the Ryan Grubb hire is potentially of this group we're going to talk about, maybe the one with the most variance to it.
Yeah. I mean, like I would say, I don't know a lot about like Nick Holtz, who's like the new Titans OC.
Well,
you know, like
sure. Yeah.
Cliff, right. Like there's like, I want to make it clear. I am excited about Grubb. I think of the guys they interviewed, and they interviewed a lot of good guys. Like I was interested in the Chip Kelly interview. Like I think Mike Kafka would be a good interview. Grubb is the one to me that has like the highest ceiling because like he was they were doing awesome stuff at Washington, right? Just like really cool like play action concepts and downfield concepts and playing off of tendencies and calling breakers at the wrong time. And like he was a very aggressive play caller, and they would come up with like really cool short yardage stuff that would allow them to rip off easy explosives. Like Grubb clearly got it. It's just one of my big things is that getting it at the college level does not map to getting it at the NFL level, not nearly as easily as we think it does. We really want to think like, oh, if they're good at college at like calling plays and designing plays, they'll be good in the league. And it's just less true than we want it to be. We just have a lot of data that the college to NFL leap for coaches is harder than we think. So that's where my uncertainty comes in. But if we hopped on this pod again in 9 months and we ranked the OC hires, there's a good chance, there's a better chance for a lot of guys that we would end up with Grubb at one. And I think that that's it's important to say that, and also important to throw a little bit of cold water on it.
Yeah, God. I mean, these last two teams we just talked about, Falcons and Seahawks, I was way too excited about both of these offenses last year. Mm-hmm. And now I can feel that excitement building up in me again. And I'm very curious my feelings are in October on both these two teams. This next one, listen, I really like Dave Canales, the Carolina Panthers hire, former Bucks offense coordinator. Loved watching that offense last year. Again, to steal your phrase here from the last couple of ones, it feels like you could tell that Dave Canales gets it. It feels like you can tell he knows what to do to get the best out of his personnel, the best out of his quarterbacks. Obviously, he has a history with the aforementioned Geno Smith as well. They hire a couple guys from that staff. Brad Idzik, former Bucks wide receiver coach, to be the offense coordinator. Harold Goodwin, who's been around the game for a long time, he is going to be the same title that he had with the Buccaneers, assistant head coach and run game coordinator. But man, Ben, it feels like this team still, even if I like Canales, has a long, long way to go to even just get to competency on offense.
Yeah, Canales was my, like, is going to get interviews this year and then be the hottest candidate next year guy coming into the cycle.
I said the exact same thing during this
process. Then the Panthers were kind of like, hey, well, we need some time anyway, so we might as well get a year ahead of this thing. And honestly, I think that's a good call. I like that. Like, I think that's a good approach. That makes sense to me. Canales, yeah, like the change from the Tampa 22 offense to the Tampa 23 offense when Canales came in was marked, right? It was noticeable. It's like, hey, like, Mike Evans can run more than three routes, actually. Like, let's ask him to do that, you know? We have this stable of receivers in the back who can like fill roles for us. Let's get a Trey Palmer game. Let's get a Devin Tompkins game. Let's get Rashad White involved in the passing game. Let's get Kate Otten more involved. Like, there, like, he made everything so easy on Baker, and Baker could execute. And like, you know, clearly, like the floor for Baker is high enough that he can get that on the field. And then you have your star receiver, and you understand how to get him activated in the game. So you need him. Like, they just, the Luke Gedecky thing worked at right tackle. The Tristan Wirfs thing worked at left tackle. Like, every single thing that they did offensively worked, which creates an unrealistic expectation that we should not carry into the Panthers at tenure. But I do think he's going to be a pretty substantial jump for Bryce Young. Like, I was a pretty big, it's wrong to say I was a Bryce Young doubter, because I had graded very highly coming out of Alabama, but I was a big, like, hey, like, if this doesn't work, it won't work. Like, if he's just too small, he's just too small, period. Like, there's worlds in which he's just bottom tier. And I think in year one, we saw kind of what that could look like. I do think there'll be a pretty big jump with Canales there in year two. I don't know if it'll, you know, I'm sure it'll trick Panthers fans into believing that Young is real. I don't know if it'll ever, like, you know, wash away the pain of CJ Stroud at two and Bryce Young at one, but I do think there could be a pretty big jump with Canales, because I do think he makes things very easy on his quarterback. He makes it clear where your eyes go, clear where the ball goes. The timing of it is nice. I think he maximizes players very well. I think they're going to get better at running back targets and tight end targets, everything shallow, everything underneath that both Thomas Brown and Frank Reich tried to do that they couldn't get done. I think they'll get a lot better at the easy stuff, the layup stuff, because Canales just does a lot of that RPO game and that quick game and that underneath game with intention. And he does it with detail, the way that to make those layups actually work like layups. Like, they drill that stuff very nicely. So I think that he's going to be good for them. Is the future of offense in Carolina at quarterback? I'm not convinced. So there's a chance that we end up talking about, you know, 2025, 26. Okay, Canales is very good, but they clearly need to make a quarterback change. They've hit the ceiling on this offense. But that's next year's problem. This year's problem is, can you get something with Bryce working? And I honestly think it can.
Yeah, I think they can get Bryce working. I kind of compared it a little bit to the Jared Goff Rams model from when they fired Jeff Fisher. They hired Sean McVay, probably, again, a lot earlier than people expected. But at the same time, and it's funny because we said Goff was kind of limited earlier, but even you could just compare physical gifts wise, like, Goff is a much superior product to Bryce Young, another former first overall pick. I'm just curious, Ben, like, from the way Dave Canales designs and runs offense, do you think it even, I mean, should it even matter if it fits with some of these guys that are on this team right now? Because they are locked into Adam Thielen on a 3-year deal. You know, they draft Jonathan Mingo in the second round. They spent money on like Hayden Hurst and Miles Sanders, but they're starting Chuba Hubbard by the end of the season. Do we expect any of these guys that I just mentioned to be a part of the immediate, I'm not talking long-term future, but just even like the 2024 immediate future of the Panthers offense?
I mean, I think you'll see Thielen be that, because Thielen will be healthy and he'll be spry and he'll be fresh. And like, when he was that, it was working for them. I don't know if that'll be a 17 game thing. And I certainly don't think you want to live in a universe where Adam Thielen is getting as many targets as he was last year, but that might be your best option wide receiver wise. So yeah, I think that you're going to get that from them. They'll try it with Mingo. Were you a Mingo guy?
I thought Mingo could only really succeed in one role, which is kind of the role that Adam Thielen was playing last year, where he's an off-ball slot guy. You're getting him a lot of just like quick hitting targets. I don't love the stuff that they did from him with him last year, where he's a perimeter guy. I mean, he still played a lot of flanker. He wasn't like a pure X. DJ Chark was kind of their pure X last year, but he's a vertical receiver. They did try some of the crossing stuff, but I was very kind of mixed on Mingo and really only kind of liked him in that one role.
Yeah, so I was not a huge Mingo guy. I'll be curious to see what they do with him. I'm a lot more interested in like them bringing in other options and finding some more speed stuff. And like, there's no one on that rod. Like, you know, Terrace Marshall, sure, let's see, right? Like, there's not like a lot that's exciting, but like, go get a fourth rounder to see what he can do. The main thing I'll be interested in year one is like, okay, if they just get offensive line stability and an offensive line improvement. Yeah. Right, they had so much instability last year. Ikem Ekwonu, that left tackle, has been a pro now for 2 years. He's had four game stretches where you're like, yep, that. There it is. That's what it is. And then it's gone.
Yeah.
And so like, it's somewhere in there. And you brought up Harold Goodwin, who's offensive line coach, run game coordinator for a while there with the Buccaneers. And he's now assistant head coach, run game coordinator. He's got an offensive line background to him. I'll be curious to see what they're able to do with Icky. But if you figure Icky out and like Moten's a good right tackle and, you know, Bradley Bozeman's on extension, Austin Corbett's on extension, like, you have dudes, like, you can get this line to be a lot better, and then that takes so much pressure off of Bryce. That's where I'm more like, they've got more fruit on the vine, where like, if they figure things out, that offensive line could take a big step forward relative to wide receiver, where they clearly just need to make additions no matter what.
All right, next one up here, Washington Commanders. They hire Dan Quinn, former Cowboys defensive coordinator, as the head coach. They hire Cliff Kingsbury, who you mentioned earlier, was the senior offensive analyst at USC. And obviously, we know him more prominently in the NFL circles as the Arizona Cardinals head coach. man, my expectations were really high about what Washington could do from a head coach, offensive play caller standpoint earlier in the offseason. And obviously, now we're sitting here with Cliff Kingsbury, where, I mean, Ben, can you get the people excited about a Cliff Kingsbury offense in Washington?
No, and I resent you for asking me to do that. I'm not coming on the show to solve these problems. This is not good. Someone get my boy Scary Terry out. Somebody get my boy.
Oh my
God. Get my boy Jahan Dotson out. All right, big Jahan Dotson fan. Good film. Let's save the man.
Dude, thank you for saying that though, because number one, I love Jahan Dotson at Penn State. I thought he was a great prospect, and I really like the rookie year film as well, but man, he is in terms of, and it's all over fantasy Twitter now at this point, like his targets per route run, yards per route run, and how they are like line up with some of the busts of the busts, like the Jalen Ragers and Laquan Treadwells and all that stuff. And it's like, man, there's a good football player in there with Jahan Dotson. And obviously Terry McLaurin, I've been a big long time Terry McLaurin backer. And I was so excited for somebody to come really milk the juice out of here. That's not what you do with juice. You don't milk it out of animals, but squeeze the juice out of these damn receivers. And I don't feel good about Cliff Kingsbury being the guy to do it.
Yeah, Cliff is like a very classic, like, don't know how to weaponize a top receiver, right? Because with DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona, it was just leave him on the left side of the field for 98% of the snaps, and he runs four routes. Like, that's what we do with the outside receiver here in the air raid. And it's like, okay, sick. But that doesn't, again, like, that's a perfect example of like, college doesn't climb to the NFL as easily as we think it does. You need to be more creative with the guy. You need to get him more reps off of the field. You need to hide his alignment more, like, just to keep him mentally engaged with the game. So maybe Cliff's learned from that. Like, you know, like, I will be very interested to see what he does on the field that's new. Because we have to remember those Arizona teams, they would come out every year, September and October, and pitch gas, right? They would come out, it's, and they true. Would do some new stuff, and they would have, you know, Cliff would have been in the lab in the summer, and they would have, you know, come up with some designer stuff on third and fourth down that allowed him to extend drives, and like, they would come out with new things. And Cliff had a whole year off, so like, I think he's going to come out with some new stuff. I would not be surprised if you and I are suffering in September and October. Commander Sam's, oh, Ben's all like, I'm Matt Harmon. You guys said it was bad, and it's good. You're an idiot. But it's the long game. It's, they don't evolve over the course of the year. They don't, they get stale. And when they start to reach resistance, when they start to have problems, they revert back to their basic stuff, right? That's a classic air raid staples. Like, when you don't know what to do, just call a mesh. It's probably going to work. Like, that's like at the NFL level, it is not that easy. And so I think it's very clearly Caleb bait. I subscribe to all notions that they're trying to land Caleb Williams, and that Cliff is tight with Caleb and knows what sort of offense Caleb wants to run and how he sees the game. He was his quarterback's coach last year at USC. And so, you know, okay, Cliff's going to, it's going to be you know, Caleb and Cliff in Washington is going to be the new era, the DC boy back, football, whatever.
Yeah, right.
And I think there's going to be a game in September where it looks like you'll see it all making sense and Terry will have 170 yards on 12 targets and it'll feel amazing. But I don't think it's going to stand the test of a season. I don't think it's going to stand the test of long-term time. There's not enough creativity on the staff to me. It's Dan Quinn with Cliff Kingsbury and Brian Johnson. Like, it's just, I those are known commodities to me, and I don't like the sum of the parts there. So I have a lot of doubts about the way Washington built it.
I mean, shoot, even, yeah, bringing up Brian Johnson, who's the quarterback coach, passing game coordinator on the team, or just, yeah, like, that's this very similar offense that came out pretty hot in September and October, but the longer the season wore on, the fewer answers that this team was able to provide. And I'm very concerned about the exact vision that you played out there. Like, look, I'd love to look like a dumbass about this team and the way I'm talking about not being excited about Cliff Kingsbury, because I love these receivers. I mean, Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin should be one of the top duos in the NFL. But they haven't been maximized for years there in Washington, and I'm concerned we're going to see the exact same thing with Cliff Kingsbury. And yeah, I mean, shoot, they don't have full access to Caleb Williams at this point. Like, they might end up with the Drake May or something like that. So we've got a lot of questions here. And I don't know, just give me the rough sort of like Ben Solak take on these top three quarterbacks, because this is probably one of the teams that is going to come away with one of these two guys or one of these three guys.
Caleb's very good. You should draft him very early, and you should kind of, you know, try to get some reins on the Bronco, but in general, let the Bronco buck. He's going to have to mature at the NFL level. I'm confident that he will. I think a lot of what he did at USC was, I kind of have to do this because our defense is horrible, and I think that he can be a lot more mature of a player. I love Caleb. May is excellent. May is unbelievable. I would love to have the second pick in this draft. Make somebody else figure out who the best one is, and I just take the other guy, and I hope that I roll CJ Stroud. May is big, and he's fast, and he's strong, and he's dynamic, and he's aggressive, and he's intelligent, and he's risk prone. Like, absolutely, he holds the ball like a knucklehead. But like, I love that. I'd rather have a guy be like, it's Brock Purdy theorem. I'd rather have a guy who's too aggressive and I have to dial him down than have a Jimmy Garoppolo and try to dial him up. And so to me, like, Drake is a clear, would take him at one, would take him at two. I'm not like, I think Jaden's fun. I think Jaden can be a good pro. I am not remotely in the camp of this guy should go top two. He should go above May. Maybe he's better than Caleb. Same thing with JJ McCarthy for me. Like, he's multiple tiers below Jaden. Jaden is just like, if Caleb and May are both risk prone, which I think they are, then Jaden Daniels is risk seeking. He is risk period.
Yeah.
Like, he is just like, there's a lot. I just watched that Alabama game, and just all he did the whole game was just wait for the routes to get far enough downfield so that he could scramble. Like, there's just not a lot right now that's like, oh, this consistently works in the NFL in Jaden Daniels' game. There's the physical tools are there and the flashes are there. Down and down consistency is not there for me. And so I would love Drake. I would love Caleb. If I were the Patriots at three, I'd really be either praying Jaden goes with one of the top two picks or really trying to convince the league that I like Jaden enough that I can trade out of the pick.
Yeah, I've obviously started working on these LSU receivers, and man, Jaden Daniels gets himself crushed as a scrambler too. So risk-seeking is a good way to say it. Let's move on to the Tennessee Titans here. And this one I'm excited to hear your opinion about, because I don't have an opinion really too deeply, certainly about the offensive coordinator hire. They hire Bengals offensive coordinator Brian Callahan to be the head coach. Everybody says great things about Brian Callahan, and he brings his father along as the offensive line coach. That's a nice hire. They bring in Jaguars passing game coordinator Nick Holes to be the offensive coordinator for this team. I didn't love the way the Jaguars passing game looked last year from a design standpoint. So I don't know how to feel about that one, Ben. But again, this hire does feel like a lot of unknown to me. Where do you stand with this group of coaches here?
Yeah, so right. Holtz is a Raiders connection with Callahan. They were coached together in Vegas. I want to say like late 2010s. It was like 2017, 2018, something like that. And yeah, like, it's very clear, like, hey, like, I think you're a great coach. Like, you know, we end up splitting, going our own ways. Like, hopefully our paths cross down the road. And lo and behold, Holtz ends up getting a, you know, Jaguars passing game gig because Jim Bob Cooter leaves. He's kind of just floating around in the quarterback wide receiver zeitgeist of things. And Callahan finds a landing spot with Joe Burrow and Zach Taylor and calls plays and slowly climbs. And now he's got this Titans job. I think Callahan, like, is a fine hire. I think that Callahan, especially this past year, did like smart stuff and worked around quarterback issues and worked around wide receiver injuries and worked around like offensive line problems. They, I would say over the course of like 4 years in Cincinnati, I've had an equal number of issues with the way that the Bengals have designed things that I've had like appreciations for it. Like, there's been stretches where I'm like, hey, I can tell if you're runner passing based if you're in shotgun or under center. Like, this is pretty simple. Like, you can't be this basic, can't be this predictable. But then, like, this past year, over the just a 1 year sample size, I thought they were pretty impressive. So it was an arrow up for me this year for Brian Callahan. You brought up people have great things to say. Yeah, like Callahan very clearly seems like a guy who connects well with people, and like he's made himself available to Bengals and to national media, and like he's got a lot of fans in our space. He's the son of a coach. He's got a lot of connections in the coaching space. There's nothing wrong with hiring a guy who's like a good dude who handles his business and can bring in good coaches, can connect well with players, can like fix, fix is the wrong word, can change a cultural approach there in Tennessee, where like previously Mike Vrabel was like, hey, I run this ship. If anybody looks at me sideways, I'm going to punch them in the mouth. Like that's kind of the way that they present Vrabel there nowadays. And so I don't find it to be an inspiring hire. I don't find it to be an offensive hire. Accordingly, Nick Holtz, like, they're going to run Callahan's like stuff. But even then, Callahan's stuff was Joe Burrow stuff. Callahan was like, we have T, we have Jamar, we have Joe. Let's just spread it out and throw nine balls. Like, that's going to work for us. If he does that with Will Levis, which I don't think he's going to do, like, they'll die. Like, they have no shot with the way Levis plays. It is the polar opposite of the way that Burrow plays. And so offensive group, this is a complete question mark right now. They're going to bend everything to the personnel they've got, especially when they make wide receiver changes. Derrick Henry might be gone. Like, they are scrambling for a new identity on that side of the ball. And so they're going to put Levis out there. They're going to put as much talent out there as they got. They're going to see what it looks like, see if they can hang more on Treylon Burks, LOL, hang more on DeAndre Hopkins, hang more on Will Levis. Like, what do you guys want to do? And then after a year, I think they'll sit down and say, okay, we got to get this receiver and we got to get this running back. And then that'll allow us to go this way. And so total question mark right now in Tennessee.
Yeah. Weirdly, I feel better about, I mean, again, it's all guesswork when we're talking about head coaching hirings, or at least educated guesswork is a nice way of saying it. It's the offseason approved way of saying it. Educated guesswork here on these head coaching hires. I feel better about Brian Callahan as an offensive designer, as a coach generally, because of what I saw with this team without Joe Burrow. Because, yeah, I agree with you. If we're just coming in like, he's white hot off a great Joe Burrow season, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and all these guys. Like, okay, from a schematic standpoint, I don't really know what to take away from that because that's such a unique thing. But seeing that offense with Jake Browning and some of the ways that they changed things, some of the ways they deployed Chase and mixed things up, I feel pretty good about that. It's just, I'm with you that this personnel in Tennessee, I mean, Will Levis aside from it, it's Hopkins another year older. I've never been a big Treylon Burks guy. I don't know that he's a part of their future. You know, Chig Okonkwo didn't have the second season that many were hoping for. And yeah, I think they are moving on from Derrick Henry. Yeah. And I like Tajay Spears. I think he's an explosive back, but we just haven't seen him be a full-time back over the course of a season yet. So there's a lot of question marks. But again, I feel better about Brian Callahan answering some of those questions based on what we saw last year. Let's talk about the Raiders, who they permanently hire Antonio Pierce as the head coach. I think all the players wanted them to do it, so I think they went ahead and did it. I have not loved the way they filled out the staff after Antonio Pierce, though. Former Bears offense coordinator Luke Getsy wouldn't say that that was a cutting-edge offense there in Chicago the last few years. They just hired Rich Scangarello to be the quarterback coach, I think, this morning. Again, I love what Antonio Pierce did with the Raiders to end last season, and I'm very excited about him as the head coach. Not as excited about the rest of the staff.
Yeah, I feel like the Raiders, they wanted Cliff, and then that didn't work, and so they got their second guy in Luke Getsy, and now Rich Scangarello is their, like, oh, well, you guys have Cliff because he was the quarterback coach of Caleb Williams, so we have a guy who was helping train him in the offseason, Scangarello. Like, are you guys also trying for Caleb? Like, what is the situation?
Yeah.
Getsy. I think the biggest opponents, the biggest doubters, the biggest detractors of Getsy probably give him an unfair rap where, like, Fields is a highly mercurial player. There's a lot of offensive line issues they had there in Chicago. Like, I'm not, like, you know, 99th percentile on anti-Luke Getsy and anti that offense. I'm like 85th, though. There was just so many weeks where someone is making a procedural error, somebody is making a route error, somebody's making a protection error. Like, they were the most mistake-riddled offense for 2 years. They were getting better by the end of 23, but even then, it was like, this is okay now. Like, this is average. It's not even like you guys are like a high execution team in general. So they just made so many mistakes under Getsy in terms of the on-field product on Sunday, and then they would walk into Sunday with so many game plans. You're like, why? Like, none of this is helpful. Like, it's very clear what's going to help you win with this team, what's not going to help you win with this team. And the fact that they had that stretch of quarterback design runs in 22, where you're like, okay, they get it. And then they walked down this year and they didn't have it again. And you're like, okay, like, I understand you're trying to make Justin Fields mature and you're trying to get to an offense where like he doesn't have to run, but you got to know what you need to do to like keep the team afloat, keep the field afloat. I just found him to be, I found Getsy's offenses in Chicago, and like maybe this was less his fault than it appears from the outside. I just found them to be poorly intended and poorly designed. And so now he's in Las Vegas where like he's tight with Devontae Adams. Cool.
I didn't even think about that.
And, I think that's the main reason why he's there. That, like, you know, Getsy was on the offensive coaching staff with Devontae in Green Bay, right? And that was kind of the initial selling point for him in Chicago, is that he was associated with like the late career Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers MVP pushes, Devontae's the best receiver in the league pushes, and so on and so forth. So now he's in the Vegas with the Raiders. He's tight with Devontae. Great. So Devontae's going to get a lot of targets. Like, awesome. You guys don't have a quarterback. Like, what value add is he going to bring besides being like, we should throw the ball to 17? A lot of guys would have come in and been like, you know what we should do? Yeah, throw the ball to 17. And so this doesn't bring a lot to the table for me. If we see Luke Getsy once again at the hands of like developing and molding a young, talented quarterback, like let's say they get Jaden Daniels, I'm not going to be stoked about that. I'm going to be very worried about that given the evidence that I have from Chicago.
No, that's a great point. I think if you're betting on Getsy succeeding in Vegas, you are betting against a lot of the players that the Bears have thrown out there besides like DJ Moore the last few years, which, to be fair, not the worst bet in the world you could make. So I didn't even put together the Getsy and Devontae Adams connection because, yeah, I think the Raiders offense, again, a lot of variance with this because love Devontae Adams, obviously. I've been a long time Jacoby Myers, bro. I think that Michael Mayer showed some flashes. So there's some players in Vegas, but we'll see what happens there. Final one here. And again, I'm kind of like, I think this is the most we'll see hire here. The Patriots obviously part ways with Bill Belichick. They promote Jerod Mayo to head coach. They hire former Browns offense coordinator Alex Van Pelt. But dude, Patriots don't have any players. I mean, they have like Pop Douglas, Ramondre Stevenson, and like an interior offensive line, sort of.
Yeah.
Everything else is just, I mean, it's a total blank slate here with this team, so I have no idea how to feel.
Yeah, and the Van Pelt thing is like a really big moving part because the whole value of Van Pelt is like, okay, he's been around in the league for forever. He's been on a ton of different offensive coaching staffs, right? Like, he was an offensive coordinator with the Bills in 2009. And since then, he's bounced like Tampa Bay quarterbacks, Green Bay running backs, Green Bay quarterbacks, Cincinnati quarterbacks, Cleveland OC, Cleveland OCN quarterbacks. Like, he's just been with a ton of different coaching staff, seen a ton of different stuff. So he's going to come to New England and like run something grown up, run something that is like an NFL offense, which could be pretty new for them there over the last couple of years. Like, that's going to, I think, make it a lot easier for you to evaluate your players. Okay, who works here and who doesn't? If they retain either of the quarterbacks that they have in Mack and Zappe, it'll help you evaluate those guys. I don't know what you don't know about those dudes yet, but like, if that's the way you want to approach it, great. I think that, right, he's got a ton of quarterbacking experience, and so you feel good with him kind of working with a young quarterback and a rookie with whoever they get at 3 overall and kind of helping shepherd that guy along as he develops. So there's going to be a maturity and a professionalism that hasn't existed there, right? Like I said a little bit at the top one with Harbaugh in the Chargers, just growing up, right? Just bringing the floor up a little bit. Is Van Pelt going to bring something novel to the NFL scheme meta that hasn't been seen before? No, right? Like this, they did not swing on a McVay. They did not swing on a Mike McDaniel. They said, like, let's just get a dude in here and make sure that we know what offense looks like. If we have to make a transition later, we will. So I think that's like overall fine. It's just not thrilling. Doesn't get me up out of bed. I just see it. I'm like, all right, sick. Great. Right. The main thing for them right now is the cupboard. If you go and you draft Jaden Daniels at 3, good. Great. You quarterback of the future. You got to make sure you have what is necessary around him that he doesn't get David Card, right? Like in terms of pass protection, in terms of, make sure it doesn't get Sam Darnold in terms of like receivers. You have to ensure that the bedrock, the foundation is there, that if he's going to develop, if he's going to grow, he actually can. He can get roots down. He can get sunlight. He can get the things that you need as a young quarterback to mature and to grow. They don't have that currently. And so I don't know if they're going to spend the money for it. I don't know if they're going to just kind of ride with it and take a year off. I love the Patriots as a trade out of 3 team. Just get so many picks and add so much to this roster. And like, okay, if Drake Bay falls, take him. But like if they go 3 Daniels, I think they're really wasting some of the value of that pick. Go let the Vikings. Go let the Raiders, like a team that's really a Falcons team that's like really desperate for a quarterback. Go let them do this. rock a year with Jacoby Brissett, bring Jacoby back, great vibes, and come back to the 2025 draft class, which I know like isn't as good of a quarterback class, but you don't want to be spending three on the third best quarterback in this class right now. You want to be getting receivers and offensive tackles and the things that are necessary to make a quarterback good whenever you get him.
Yeah, I probably like a month ago just thought, hey, you have the third pick. You probably don't think you're going to be picking here very often if you're the New England Patriots. You haven't been, certainly over the last 25 whatever years. But, man, you take a quarterback there and drop him into this situation, it could end up being a nightmare, even if Van Pelt does represent that adult in the room. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to run through just the offensive coordinator changes after this. And we're back. Ben, let's pick up the pace here and talk through some of these offensive coordinator change, no head coaching changes here. Let's start with your Philadelphia Eagles. They hire former Chargers offensive coordinator and Cowboys offensive coordinator before that, Kellen Moore. This one, to me, I've talked a lot about on the show and recently, as I could see this one going either way. Like, you could talk me in either direction with Kellen Moore as an offensive coordinator. So where do you stand on this Eagles offense with Moore being brought into the fold?
Hey, yeah, if there's three ways things can go, great, terrible, and fine, I can see it going two ways, not fine. This is a big Jalen Hurts. Like, you know, Jalen Hurts did work this season being like, you know, getting some leaks out. Like, I want to throw more middle of the field and they won't let me and so on and so forth. All right, put up or shut up, right? Last two quarterbacks playing this offense are Dak and Justin Herbert. Those are high caliber pre and post snap processors. Those are decision makers. And whether because of Hurts' limitations or because of just the way that the offense works, because it's like a college offense, he hasn't really been asked to do much of that over the last couple of years. So this is now big boy offense in terms of the passing game with Javonte Smith, with A.J. Brown, with the Eagles' caliber of pass protection. There is no question that the Kellen Moore offense should work if the quarterback is operating it correctly. Big, big, big dinner on Jalen Hurts' plate right now. And they gave him a big extension, so they expect him to be able to do this. And so I think there's worlds in which the Eagles are a top five passing offense, and that also Jalen Hurts with his legs solves some of the Kellen Moore running game issues, and this is a really, really dangerous group. I think there's also some worlds where they're a legit bottom 10 offense. And it's because passing game-wise, they're not trying to just, okay, let's hit a deep ball shot and get 45 yards. They're trying to be like a grown-up, matriculate the ball offense, and they have an issue at a quarterback that doesn't allow them to do it. So big heat check for Jalen Hurts in this one. I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, that's a fascinating perspective on it, just the Jalen Hurts heat check aspect of it. Because, yeah, as a receiver guy, when I sit down and think about like what they could do with deploying A.J. Brown, what they could do with deploying Devontae Smith, and kind of contrasting it to what they did in Philadelphia the last couple of years. Because I love Shane Steichen, but like the deployment of those players, basically the same the last two seasons, really, in my opinion. I like what they could do in this offense. I like how they could mix some tight ends into the equation here. But again, it all comes back to what's under center. And your opinion on Jalen Hurts is very dependent on how you're going to feel about what offense Philadelphia rolls out this year, which isn't advanced analysis. I mean, he's a damn quarterback of the team. So I like that perspective on it there. Like, so you think it's more likely to not go well than it is to go well?
Yeah. But I reserve the right to change that.
Well, dude, nobody's writing anything in pen here on February 20th.
This is one of the things I'm most interested to see in the entire league this offseason, is Kellen Moore and Jalen Hurts and how what Kellen Moore's done offensively, which is very different than what Jalen Hurts has played in offensively over the last few years, how those two things meld together.
Yeah, and I know fantasy football players will hate this because nobody loves a concentrated target tree quite like fantasy football players, but I'd like to see it like some improvement at wide receiver 3 or wide receiver 4. Like, let's get some other threats on this team that can maybe offer a little bit of dynamism beyond the top two guys. But all right, let's move on to Pittsburgh, where they hire former Falcons head coach Arthur Smith. Ben, I'm going to cede the floor to you completely because as seemingly the football industry's perhaps lone psychotic Arthur Smith defender, I maybe need to recuse myself, not from a head coaching standpoint, but simply from an offensive coordinator standpoint, an offensive play caller, offensive designer standpoint. I like Arthur Smith, and basically everybody else hates Arthur Smith. So I'm going to recuse myself from this discussion and just get your sense of the situation.
No, I think Arthur Smith was a good OC in Tennessee, and the way that he designed offense there and like for his early time in Atlanta made sense to me. That he was a good offensive coach. The wheels really came off down the stretch there in Atlanta, where like they were terrible from an execution perspective, and they were still pretty bad from a game planning perspective too. Just like Ritter and Bijan Robinson can never agree on like where routes should be, right? They just had they were so bad in short yardage. They had so many of the little red flags that pop up. You're like, oh, this is not a well-coached unit right now. Like their execution, their situational football, their details, like none of this is good. Why was that? Like, it really felt like Smith like lost a handle on the team, like just all of the press conferences, yeah. And he was just arguing with people and they're making quarterback changes. Like, it seemed like being in the CEO spot was not great for him. I think as an OC, it's going to be better. I think they're going to see it be more like what it was in Tennessee. Because it's funny, right? Like, I know, like, fantasy people's complaints, like, the target distributions. Whereas, like, in Tennessee, it was never an issue. It was A.J. Brown from the middle of the field. So, like, yeah. where did this problem come from? And it's like Smith had too much on his plate. And going back to just being, like, a play caller at OC, I think that will benefit him. What worries me in Pittsburgh is if we say Smith's issue are like player management, roster management, narrative management, like letting the world get to him. You have one of the most vocally unhappy receiver rooms in NFL history, and Deontay Johnson and George Pickens there in Pittsburgh.
God, yeah.
And obviously, like, Mike Tomlin is the great eraser, right? Mike Tomlin is the great stabilizer. But man, this is a concoction we got going on here. This is some highly combustible materials that we have interfacing with Arthur Smith and with Pickens and Deontay and then whoever the quarterback ends up being, right? Like a new body brought into the system. And so there's worlds in which this is like fine from an on-field perspective, but also it's terrible from like a locker room perspective. Like every time they lose, like it's a really hard thing. And then, you know, you end up getting, okay, we got to get targets to this guy and this player's unhappy. And like, again, the wheels fall off. So X's and O's, I like it. Smith returning to OC, I like it. Exact fit in Pittsburgh remains to be seen. I think it's great. I think like it's great news to Najee and Jalen. I have no doubt about that. Everybody else, I'm interested to see what this looks like.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect way of saying it. I've been saying that it feels like Arthur Smith just lost the plot down the stretch in Atlanta, and that's just kind of the way I've described that situation there. But you're right that, I didn't consider this, but like George Pickens especially and Deontay Johnson, like in Arthur Smith mixing in there, it's like that gif or that meme or whatever of the guy, like the chef pulling the lid off the pot and just dropping it in there and like everything's about to explode. That's kind of how this feels to me. So I'm with you that, again, I should probably be a little more mixed on what's going to happen there. This next one I am a little mixed on as well. I like Joe Brady, who was permanently promoted to the offensive coordinator job by the Buffalo Bills. And we generally know, I think, what the product sort of is going to look like, maybe should look like with Josh Allen, the Buffalo Bills, with Joe Brady there. At the same time, right, like I think that Stephon Diggs' role kind of withered away. And in my opinion, Ben, Joe Brady doesn't come in there, take the job from Ken Dorsey and be like, first thing I got to do, I got to get Diggs out of this offense, yeah. Right? Like that's not what happened. So I think I'm curious to see what this team looks like under Joe Brady with the full offseason to plan. I don't know. Where do you stand on Brady and just like this era of Bills football?
I think any offense with Josh Allen running it is going to be a top five offense. If Allen's throwing knucklehead picks, it's going to be five. And if Allen's not throwing knucklehead picks, it's going to be two. And that's kind of where your difference is. Over the last couple of years, the Bills have invested a lot in improving their running game. I think Ken Dorsey deserves a lot of credit for that. Aaron Cromer, who's the new O-line coach there, came from the Rams. I think he deserves a lot of the credit for that. I think Joe Brady kind of reaped the fruits of that. And I'll be curious to see, like, Brady doesn't read as, man, this guy loves to run the football. But I think that's the important thing for Buffalo is kind of being able to do that. You've seen how important that's been for the Chiefs as they've entered like the late elite era of Mahomes, where like everybody's just sitting on top of them too high. Like, don't you throw the ball down the field. I think that'll keep Allen from his better self. The outstanding question to me is, right, like how much what does the Diggs target share look like as he gets older? Who takes the Gabriel Davis role? Can Khalil Shakir step up into a bigger role? Dalton Kincaid in year two? Like, there's target distribution questions. I'm very confident in Allen's ability to suss that out and Brady's ability to kind of also be there while that's being sussed out and like contribute, certainly. But I think like the real driving force of this offense is Allen. So I'm confident it's going to be a great unit. I'm more interested to see, like, when we sit back in August, we're trying to figure out, okay, like, who's the guy who's going to get the, you know, 85 targets and the, you know, 800 yards and the 8 touchdowns that are just kind of sitting around in this group. That figuring out that player is going to be interesting to me. As a big, longtime Khalil Shakir proponent, I know where I'm at, but they should add bodies for sure.
Yeah, their issues are more personnel, I think, than scheme related there. Other than, again, I think they have to find better ways to get Diggs going there if he is on the roster. And I do expect him to stay on that roster right now. Mm-hmm. Talk about a take I'm writing in pencil right now. I expect him to be on the roster. All right, Chicago Bears, they hire former Seahawks offensive coordinator Shane Waldron to be the offensive coordinator. They hire former Panthers offensive coordinator to be the passing game coordinator Thomas Brown there. Ben, there were times I loved what Shane Waldron did as the Seahawks offensive coordinator, but mostly prior to this year, where there were times I got a little frustrated about their inability to get the middle of the field going from a passing game standpoint, some of the just ISO routes on the outside. I don't know. Where do you stand with Waldron and obviously his pairing with the eventual number one overall pick?
I think overall Waldron is a good coach. I think overall he's an above average offensive coordinator. He's not a guy who I think I'm like scrambling to hire as my head coach and like a revolutionary, but I think he runs the McVay stuff with his twists well. I do think that, yeah, like over their time in Seattle, like they tried to put a lot of solutions on the table to solve the offensive tackle issues in terms of like getting rid of the ball quickly and stuff. And like some of them worked and some of them didn't. Waldron suffers, I think, a lot from too smart for his own good, too creative for his own good. There's a lot of stuff that he does, whether it's like a situational one-off play or like, you know, an approach walking into a game where you're like, Shane, like, dude, like, just chill. Like, we don't gotta like, you know, just hand it to Kenneth and get a second and six. Like, there's a lot of like, there's a lot of like reinventing the wheel that would happen, I think, in Seattle. So I think like a change of location and a little bit of humble pie can probably be good for Waldron in that regard. Overall, I'm bullish though. I'm pro Waldron. He asked a lot out of Geno, a lot protection wise, a lot change the play wise, a lot read stuff out wise. I'll be curious to see like Chicago drafts Caleb. I just wouldn't want to ask him for that much in year one. And so I'm curious what Waldron looks like when he starts thinking about how to put the kid gloves on a guy. And that's where I think Thomas Brown can be a benefit to him, right? Where, Thomas Brown obviously was with Carolina last year, didn't necessarily like successfully get the kid gloves on the guy, but like went through that experience of, okay, like what will this be like? He coached under McVay for the last couple of years, and McVay is like the king of how to get kid gloves on a guy. Obviously, most of those years were Stafford years, but still, like, I think Brown is a little bit more experienced in that regard. Waldron, obviously, with McVay over that time as well. And so that's the outstanding question mark for me is like they can't ask their rookie to do everything that Geno did. That's how this thing falls apart. Overall, though, I think it's a good offensive staff.
Yeah, that's a good point about Geno Smith and what they asked him to do. I think on the outside, you're thinking, oh, Geno Smith, journeyman veteran, like they probably put the gates up for him, put the bumpers up on the bowling lane for Geno Smith. But that is not what they asked Geno to do at all as the offensive, like with that offensive infrastructure there. So I think that's going to be pretty fascinating to see what they roll out with a rookie quarterback. In New Orleans, they hire former 49ers passing game coordinator Clint Kubiak to be the offensive coordinator. Ben, I hated watching the Saints offense on film last year. It was one of the least enjoyable parts of the weekly prep. How do we feel about a 49ers offshoot offense maybe under Clint Kubiak coming here with Derek Carr still as the quarterback and some exciting pass catchers that I like?
Yeah.
Some players overall there that I generally appreciate at the wide receiver position. I don't know, man. Again, I just have such like a bad taste in my mouth about this offense overall. How much of that was Pete Carmichael? How much of that is just Derek Carr, Dennis Allen, and what remains there?
Heck yeah, man. I like a lot. You could have put me in this job and I think it would have been a better offense in terms of play calling than it was last year. Clint's kind of just bounced around the Kubiak Shanahan conjoined family tree, and understandably so. Look at the last name. I have no reason to believe that he's going to like Mike McDaniel the offense. Well, you know, reinvent everything. But at the same time, if you had brought up me on and said Texans hire Bobby Slowick, Ben, what do you think? I would have said I have no reason to believe he's going to Mike McDaniel the offense, and he didn't. But he sure freaking helped it. And so, like, it's a Shanahan hire. We should expect that they run an offense that, like, we know works in the NFL, right? The recipe's written down. We know the quantities. We know how long to cook this thing. Like it. This will work. This will taste good. I don't think it's going to suddenly jump to be like a top 10 unit. I don't think that Carr is aggressive enough for that to happen. I don't think Carr's just talented enough, good enough a quarterback at this point. I think that he's kind of just a middle tier guy that's going to be lifted up by the nature of this offense. But I think it's great for Chris Olave, who I think is going to get a lot more easy targets, a lot more targets in space than he's enjoyed over his first couple of years. I think like Rashid Shaheed, I think, plays a good role in this. I think it's good for like an A.T. Perry, right? And start using the big guy over the middle of the field a little bit more. Running game wise, I think that they can see a big jump if they get offensive line health, which I think is good for like a Kendre Miller as they kind of transition into their after Alvin Kamara era. So there's like a lot of, like you say, talented Saints skill position players that I'm excited to see in an offense that's run with more intention and then knows how to get some really like easy targets for guys. Not least among which is definitely Olave. Like Olave is more well known than London is, but I don't think people realize like just how ridiculously talented Chris Olave is. And I think this offense can help him out quite a bit. So good hire. Again, a rock would have been a good hire, but good hire.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Solak himself could have come in there and run a better offense. Yeah,
we're running a single wing. We would have been all right, brother.
But no, I love easy targets. That's what we need for these receivers. I mean, I posted about this at some point during the regular season, but like simply the amount of slant routes and other layup routes that Chris Olave has run through the first 2 years of his career is absurdly low if you look back at like reception perception history. And I've been doing this since 2014 now, which is crazy, by the way. Like it's just absurd how little layup routes, how few layup routes they gave him in that offense. That's going to change simply just by the design of it. And I like that you mentioned A.T. Perry too, and sort of the Bobby Slowick and Houston Texans of it all. I don't have the same high opinion of A.T. Perry. I like A.T. Perry, but I had a very, very high opinion of Nico Collins prior to 2023. Yes, and seeing him run those like big in-breaking routes as the X receiver on that offense was perfect. I wonder if we could see something similar with A.T. Perry there. So that's a good kind of deeper sleeper to keep in mind.
Yeah, to me, it's all the summer podcast for propping up Nico Collins last year. The people didn't know. Oh, we knew. Other people didn't know.
We knew, baby. I mean, we knew. Like, yeah, he was everybody's little favorite sleeper in fantasy coming into 2023. Go back and find the 21 receipts on Nico Collins from my account, okay? Like, yeah, and I love the way he was activated in this offense. And yeah, A.T. Perry, it's kind of got me thinking, I wonder if there could be sort of maybe a similar vision there. But really, to me, it's all about Chris Olave. Like, if you, Clint Kubiak, can figure out Chris Olave and like how to get him some, not, and he should shoot, it shouldn't even be that hard to figure out. Guy gets open all the time. Let's get him the ball on some layup routes there. All right, let's talk about Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who hire Liam Cohen to replace Dave Canales as the offensive coordinator. Any Liam Cohen hot takes to give out for the Bucs offense?
Not particularly. The thing with Cohen that like raises my eyebrow is just, I don't love when a guy goes from being Kentucky OC to Rams offensive coordinator to Kentucky OC to Bucks offensive coordinator. Like, the amount of bopping around is kind of like, all right, like, what do you want? What do you want to, like, do you want to be a college guy? Do you want to be an NFL guy? Like, you were Sean McVay's offensive coordinator in 2022. That was a pretty good gig. Like, obviously, like, oh, maybe Sean's going to retire, like, Stafford is hurt or whatever. But in general, like, this is just a coaching staff you want to be on if your objective is, like, NFL head coaching rising. And so I don't really understand what Cohen wants to get done with his career, which is just like weird to me altogether. I mean, again, college to NFL, he was successful at the college level, and then the NFL, he was on a coach, on a staff that was very successful, and there, you know, run the classic stuff with twists. It's kind of Shane Waldron theorem, right? He knows how to run the hits, and he's putting his own spin on it. We'll see if the spin actually adds much to it. I think that it's good for Baker. I think it's the right system for him. I think overall, it is a good hire that makes sense. I don't think it'll be as good as the Canales offense, but we talked about him earlier. I hold Canales in a pretty high regard, and so I'm fine with it. I don't think it's revolutionary. I don't think it's bad.
Yeah, there's some connective tissue there with Baker Mayfield spent some time with the 2022 Rams, and obviously Liam Cohen was the offensive coordinator there. I just have nothing to take from that 22 season, really, from an offensive standpoint, just because it was such a train wreck in Los Angeles. So I'm open to believing anything here. And I don't have a lot on these last two ones either. Cleveland hires Ken Dorsey, former Bills offensive coordinator, to be their offensive coordinator. I don't know if I really care about that because it's still going to be Kevin Stefanski's offense, and they got a lot to do to just get to competency with Deshaun Watson under center. And I mean, really, I don't know if you have anything to say about Dan Pitcher becomes the offensive coordinator in Cincinnati. He's promoted from the quarterback coach. They're just keeping that pipeline alive.
Yeah. So Cincinnati, you absolutely just right. Keep the internal guy. Like, that makes a ton of sense. I think, like, you know, it's important to add new ideas from like wide receiver coach and passing game coordinator. And you get that done when you get that done. But like, Burrow's a huge fan of the guy. Promote him. Great, whatever. Ken Dorsey, I liked Ken's offenses in Buffalo. I thought that Ken was a good offensive designer. I think he's a good OC. I like the hire for Cleveland. I think that Ken can bring benefit to the running game, which is going to be, you know, like, always been good under Stefanski, but that's going to be nice to see. I don't think Ken is capable of solving Deshaun Watson. I don't think anybody is. And so it's kind of a question of, is Ken able to keep the other players happy? Well, you know, like, Deshaun's struggling the way that he has been for his entire Cleveland career at this point. And is Ken able to work around the backup quarterbacks if and when Deshaun gets hurt? Like, that's kind of your question marks. I feel good about the first one, keeping the players happy. The second one, you know, they don't have Joe Flacco walking through that door, so you got to kind of play around DTR. And Stefanski's the straw that stirs the offensive drink there. So I think Dorsey will bring new ideas, but I don't think it's a huge needle mover in any direction.
all right, buddy, I'm going to give you just the floor is yours if you want to hit on any defensive coordinators that were hired that really, I don't know, really got you jazzed up here since we only talked offense here as a fantasy focus show. Any of these defensive coordinators you just like, man, that one lights your fire and makes you feel really good about the team going forward?
I think Zimmer to the Cowboys might be the thing that pushes them over the edge. I love Zimmer to the Cowboys. I think that's great for them. Vic, Uncle Vic to Philly. Absolutely. Eastern Pennsylvania guy, Stroudsburg guy, represent the 570, baby. What's up? So very happy about Vic. I think that a lot of people are like more tepid than they were in the Fangio system because a lot of the offshoots have been bad. But there's a big difference between having an offshoot at DC and having the original product at DC. And more so than an offense where like trees can proliferate, it's hard for defensive trees to proliferate. So when you have the actual guy who runs the defense, that is a big deal. So I think that's huge for Philadelphia. Love Ryan Nielsen. He was the Falcons OC or DC for 1 year. He's in Jacksonville now. Just a big, angry man. I think that's excellent. Looking forward to that. Jimmy Lake in Atlanta is really interesting to me. It was a good defensive coach there in Washington. Got the head coaching job, was in way over his head, and now kind of gets a second chance in Atlanta, now in the league, which is like a weird place to have a second chance. I think that's a really interesting one. I'm curious how that goes. Patriots will be fun. Jerod Mayo is a great coach. I think that defense still is awesome. That's all the ones I can think of right now off the top of my head.
Well, I'm with you, though. Mike Zimmer in Dallas, I think, is good for the league that Mike Zimmer is back, number one. And number two, there's so many defensive players there that I'm not going to say haven't been maximized of late, but I think certainly can even further be maximized under Mike Zimmer. And I think the way he calls and designs defense makes sense to combat modern offenses. So, I mean, the Cowboys, look, it's just about, like, can you win a damn playoff game? Can you win multiple playoff games? Whatever. I don't know what the standard is in Dallas these days, but I think Mike Zimmer was a good hire to replace Dan Quinn. Obviously, he was hired by
Washington. Yeah, Zimmer is going to be like it's going to be a case where you look at season long numbers and his defense won't necessarily look as good as Quinn's defense did. And it's going to be like, oh, this is bad. But when they play the top NFC teams, they're going to be better. That's the objective, is by January, you are better at matching the 49ers and the Detroit Lions and the Green Bay Packers of the world. That exact sort of offense, Shanahan McVay offense, that has given you so many issues when you had Dan Quinn as your DC. That's why I say it can be the thing that pushes them over the edge. It's like, I don't think it's going to like, you know, oh, they're going to be the Browns defense. The way that Jim Schwartz like, just took that unit and yanked them up to the top ranking. That would surprise me. But I do think that they're going to be better against that specific system in that conference when they need to win playoff games in January. And if they can, great move.
Well, Ben, I would say we absolutely hammered people with coaching knowledge and a lot of qualifiers on this show, because that's what a coaching podcast should be. But I feel like the listeners, the viewers will be better prepared for the season and what to expect out of some of these coaches. And I appreciate you coming on, man. We have known each other for years. We've met in person multiple times. And I think this is actually the first show we ever did together. So, hell of a time. Appreciate you doing it, buddy.
No, of course. I've been personally reading into the fact that I haven't been on the show yet. It's been breaking my self-confidence, my self-esteem. This is a good bounce back for me.
Well, hey, same to you, pal.
I'm not in charge of any of this. They tell me what to do.
Oh, I mean, that must be nice. I am in charge of all of the guests that come on this podcast, and that's a big burden to feel. So actually, you can personally attack me on this one in terms of not coming on the pod. But hey, your debut was electric. It was awesome. Appreciate you, Ben Solak. Everybody, make sure to check out all of Ben's work on The Ringer. Subscribe to The Ringer NFL show. Ben's the man, does great stuff there, as you can tell from this podcast. Appreciate you, buddy. And that is going to do it for us today, folks. We are back next Tuesday because I'm not doing two shows this week. I'm only doing one show this week. I deserve it, okay?
Huge for you.
I love it. And I absolutely deserve it. Again, we're going to be back next Tuesday because, believe it or not, it is somehow already NFL scouting combine week. Yahoo's extremely serious draft expert, Charles McDonald, joins me to unofficially kick off draft season on the pod. We're going to dive into the prospects you need to keep an eye on in Indy that could be instant contributors maybe in 2024 or not, or long-term development guys that we'll just obsess over and talk about on a coaching podcast.
Nico
in
Collins,
3 years.
Baby.
The next Nico Collins. That is what
next
we're going to find
Figure
for you
out.
Next week. Until then, we're out.